We can begin.
Now I've got Mr. Blackley. He has, as well as his statement of evidence, he also filed a supplementary statement of evidence, which I hope you can refer to you as well.
Thank you.
So just read my summary. I was engaged by council in 2014 to assess and identify trees, groups of trees and hedges in the Harrowtown Residential Historic Management Zone that are significant in terms of character, amenity or history, or a combination of some or all of these criteria. Assessment criteria were developed and used to determine whether the vegetation had special character values. The vegetation that met the criteria were included in 32.7 schedule of character trees in the ARHMZ of the proposed district plan. The assessment criteria were A, the contribution of the individual trees, groups of trees or hedges made to the character and amenity of the streetscape and wider environment. B, whether the vegetation contributed to heritage values. And C, the age of the vegetation and if it was typical and or representative of early plantings in Harrowtown. I consider that the character trees that have been assessed, identified and included in the PDP have been robustly assessed and evaluated. In response to specific submission points, it is my opinion that items 4, Hawthorne Hedge, 6, Hawthorne Hedge and 34, a copper beech and walnut tree have been correctly identified and given protective status on account of their contribution to the character, amenity and heritage values of the zone. I have considered the subject trees and hedges against the assessment criteria in my evidence in chief and supplementary evidence. No sound basis has been provided upon which the council should reconsider the classification of these trees, hedges as character trees. And I note that no technical evidence has been filed by submitters that challenges my evidence.
Okay, thank you. Just make sure I'm. My apologies, a bit organised here. Yes, so I just want to make sure I'm understanding it correctly. This, effectively, what we're dealing with in Harrowtown is like a subgroup of protected trees, aren't they, in the sense that they are not protected trees necessarily, but they're part of a character group with their own rules?
Yes, that's correct. It was realised that the trees have been identified specifically as significant trees didn't cover a lot of other vegetation that contributes to character and amenity and heritage values in Harrowtown. So that's why the council embarked on the separate exercise of identifying character trees.
Now, one of the issues that seems to come through the submissions is a number of the hedges seem to have upset a few of the property owners concerned. I think one in particular on the corner of Berkshire Street there has got a lengthy hedge that seems to be in various stage of conditions. Just out of interest, a number of those, because they're hedges, they're going to be partly on council land and partly on private land. So effectively, are the rules applying equally to both the council as a property owner and the landowner as a property owner?
I would expect so, yes. But it's probably a little bit beyond my area of expertise.
It was an interesting one because it didn't seem to be touched on in the actual submissions in opposition. It was just... it was almost as if it's my hedge, effectively. It occurred to me it may not be their hedge. It's yours and their hedge.
Yes. Yeah, no, I guess maybe some owners feel that because they're the ones that maintain them, generally, in probably all cases, I think, it's a bit like a grass verge on the street. It's usually maintained by the landowner, but in fact it's public land. So I suppose it's sort of a feeling that the hedges belong to them, and they probably are forgetting that it's on the boundary, and, or generally they're always on the boundary.
Yeah, that's what the issue was then. Okay, no, that's good. Thank you very much. No, that's true.
Do you specifically to do with the Hawthorne hedge that's on the, not the little Wiltshire, the smaller one that's on the...
Yes.
Berkshire, is it? Berkshire,
yeah.
And we've obviously been given evidence by the general concern that he's in absolutely no doubt that it's in the wrong spot, and fairly unequivocal about that. He's not hedging his bets, so to speak. But the obviously, the size and scale is something you take into it, or is this something that when you consider it, it's just you apply the same criteria to both?
Yes, well, in his case, for some reason, he's presumably for some he's done it. He's reduced the height of his hedge on that section to about a metre. And I noticed in his submission that I've just read now, he's saying that the people walking by see straight into his house, well, as far as I can see, that's because he's lowered the hedge. Yes, I don't see... Scale is an important part of it, and generally the hedge is a kind of 1.2 to 1.8 in Narrowtown. Does that answer the question?
So, yes, certainly, because obviously the one on Wiltshire, which I think is next to the, it's like a childcare facility, that is a substantial
item. It is, yes.
Whereas the one at the corner is much more, you know, I was being disingenuous, might call it tatty. It almost looks like it's been worked at, nipped away at the point.
I think it has. It doesn't look, I agree, it looks a bit scrappy that one.
Almost like death by a thousand cats.
Almost, yeah. But it's part of a continuous, I mean, the property below it, Levin, I think it is, has the same edge. And I assume it's part of the, it would have been, that would have been one allotment that's been subdivided. Mm-hmm. So you can see how one's been treated compared to the other. The other's dense, higher. Maybe it's a bit more love, I don't know.
Yeah. It definitely has that feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one other, just continuing the theme that was discussed earlier on about wilding species. What's your opinion on wilding species and protected trees?
Well, I think there is an inherent conflict there, and there's no easy answer to it, but I certainly don't see that in Arrowtown that you can ignore the fact that a fair number of the trees that create character and heritage are wilding trees, and I mean, nobody would dream of removing them all. It's just a conflict that exists. In my mind, it's just something that has to be managed into perpetuity, really. That I mean, there are things that could be done. For example, I think, you know, all of the conifers on the escarpment face should probably be removed. But I just see that ongoing there's going to be a requirement to manage wilding spread from going up and over and beyond the face of the hill, basically. Otherwise you'd have to remove every wilding tree in the Narrowtown. And half the trees that are in the avenue, for example, are wilding trees. It's inconceivable that you have to remove all those. I mean, I suppose at some time in the future they're going to have to be replaced. People are starting to think about that now, so that when that does happen, then you wouldn't choose sycamores. It had to be some other English, European character tree.
I like the way you drew a definition between English and European, because that's been...
Oh, you made up that one?
Yeah. No, it's just because succession planning is something that if you look at the way that lots of gardens have been set out, you and in Monica, the it does seem to be a lot of pine species. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sort of following the same with the hawthorn hedges, is it the hawthorn or the hedges that is contributes most to the character?
Well, that's a good question. I think my response to that, most importantly, would be a hedge. But I do think that hawthorns do have a strong character of their own that contribute to the heritage of Arrowtown, and they're probably the most dominant hedge species in the town. And there's always a subjective view about species of people. Some people like them, some people dislike them. I think the other thing I was going to say is that, and worth bearing in mind, is that as far as it being a wilding tree, when they're trimmed, they're not a wilding tree because you're removing the berries to a large extent, if not completely, certainly making a huge difference to the seed source. So to my mind, that makes a big difference. And the other point I'd make is that in the entrances to town, particularly the hawthorn hedge is very dominant and obvious at both entrances through the avenue coming from the golf course end, and also entering Arrowtown from the Arrowtown Lake Hayes Road. Hawthorn hedges are the dominant species.
So just to clarify that, the question coming out of that, so I do understand these other hawthorn hedges, which obviously not just these one subject to submissions, are also protected as well, but there hasn't been any submissions against them, is that the position?
Yes, that's correct. Just about every hedge in the zone was identified on that on the third character trees in the tree schedule, sorry.
Right. Yeah, that clarifies that for me.
So, yeah, only two were proposed.
You weren't here, so you didn't hear my questions before lunch, but is it your view that there's a difference between species, wildling species, and their ability to become a wildling problem, between those that are in urban areas and those in rural areas?
Probably not in Arrowtown's case, because it is so close to the rural, particularly the old part of the town. It's adjacent, immediately adjacent to rural, so there's every chance that is going to be spread from this town centre and the historic zone to the immediate surrounding environment. But I would say that perhaps in some other urban environments, maybe that is true, that there's probably less chance of spread compared to, say, a rural area.
No, I don't know whether it's in your area of expertise as a landscape architect or not, but I'll ask you the question and you can tell me whether you think it is. Do you think in that circumstance that while any potential wildling spread from trees in Arrowtown could be managed appropriately?
Do I think they could be managed?
Yes. In other words, the wildling.
Yes, it's something that I've contemplated for a long, very long time.
Mm.
And going back to 1994, I was involved in the first Barrowtown planning shred. And that issue was debated way back then. And the solution was seen that they should be managed into the future. At that stage, surrounding the town, they were only kind of about halfway up the hill. In that, since that time, we've pretty much got to the top of the hill.
Mm.
But I firmly believe that that's what's got to happen. There's got to be a line drawn around the edge, either at the top or down from the top. The wildlings managed into the future. It could be that some of the species, the worst species, are removed. As I mentioned before, the pines, I think they should be taken out. Possibly Douglas fir, though there's not so many of those. But where you stop with rowans, sycamores, don't know. I don't think you can. And I mean the rowans are the key species that give the colour to Arrowtown, the real red colour that people, that the tourists particularly come to see. So if they were all removed, that whole marketing that Arrowtown has would be lost.
Yeah, I'll just ask a question following up on that. That hillside above Arrowtown, where you've got those extremely colourful autumn trees, is that public ownership or private ownership? And is there any proposal to remove trees like the rowans? I presume is there some plan afoot to get rid of them all or what?
I don't believe so. The land is in private ownership primarily at the moment as part of either Corrie Peak's station or the other one, which escapes my mind. But they're all owned by same outfit based over Monaco. The ex-singers, the singers.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Lang.
Matt Lang,
yeah.
Shania Twain.
Shania Twain, thank you. Yes. Yeah.
But they're not protected as such, either, I take
it. No. Well, I guess in the sense that they're that's an ONL, but whether that gives protection to the trees, I doubt it. Not sure. So the backdrop to Arrowtown, at the moment it's private land, but I mean there has been discussion over the years, and I think a 10-year review when that property went through, one of the properties went through, that the face would come out of private ownership and be offered to council, but whether council would want it is another matter.
Okay, thank you. I've got no further questions.
Thank you. So the final witness to the council is Ms. Law, section 42A, author to protect the trees.
This is your first hearing.
So,
you understand.
Cool.
You made me a little bit nervous, but take it away.
Awesome. So I'm going to just read my summary. The protected trees chapter provides protection for the trees that have been identified as having high potential for botanical, amenity, and heritage values. I consider the recommended rule framework provides greater certainty regarding the maintenance and modification of trees and activities on or around the root protection area. The rule framework acknowledges the limited life of trees and that in some instances the values for which they were protected can be lost due to ill health or damage sustained. The framework provides the potential to consider substitution planting, taking into account the impacts on the values for which the tree or hedge was protected. The protected tree chapter allows landowners with a protected tree or hedge to carry out minor maintenance that would not affect the structural stability or health of the item and would not require expert guidance as a permitted activity. A discretionary activity resource consent is required for significant trimming, removal, damage or destruction of a protected tree item. I consider that this discretionary status is appropriate to protect such trees as it provides appropriate discretion for decision makers to assess the adverse effects on the botanical, amenity and heritage values of the scheduled items and ensures the continuance of such values in the district. A restricted discretionary activity is required for significant trimming, removal, damage or destruction of a tree contained in the schedule of character trees in the Arrowtown Residential Historic Management Zone. The assessment matters include the positive and negative effects of the activities on the tree item and the values for which it was protected. This includes considering the effects of removal on the surrounding environment. The amendments recommended in the revised chapter have, in my view, made the protection of scheduled trees more effective through changes to the assessment matters and allowing for the amount of natural light available to be assessed and the necessary maintenance to nearby buildings. The revised chapter allows for minor trimming of trees or hedges in the streets and public places in the ARHMZ as a permitted activity, and not just for the council, who is responsible for the maintenance of these trees, but also for other parties, such as utility companies, thus giving these particular parties the ability to ensure continued operation of their network in the area. So in regards to the submitted evidence filed from Tiana Development, the sycamore tree that has been identified in the wilding and exotic trees chapter as a species with wilding potential, prohibiting the planting of any new trees in the district. It is for this wilding potential that Tiana Developments requests that the protected status of the scheduled item 193, a sycamore located near Walter Peak Station, be removed. There are several instances throughout the district where protected trees or hedges are of species that have been identified with having wilding potential. For example, there are protected hedges in Arrowtown that are hawthorn, and there are approximately 25 sycamores that are protected throughout the district. In my view, the protected tree 193 has been found to have significant values using the STEM assessment, which takes into account botanical and amenity values. The fact that it also has wilding potential is not, in my opinion, a basis for its removal. While acknowledging that the submitter has support from the Department of Conservation for the removal of this tree, and that this tree has wilding potential, in this instance, the submitter has not provided a risk assessment from an ecologist demonstrating that this tree presents a wild threat in terms of its takeoff or its location.
Thank
you. Okay. Just first one, just a question of clarification. It relates to the spreading canopy. You've come up with a different way of defining that, mm-hmm, with a diagram. And is that, my understanding is correct, that's based on an approach which is found in other district plans that you're aware of?
So the diagram that we got changed to, I'm not aware that any other district plan uses this exact or a similar diagram, but it did show that trees grow a bit like that, not necessarily like that. You should go for further additions. That's why it was recommended.
Okay, the reason I asked that is in your 8.6, you said to find the notified version of the root protection zone to be both consistent with other councils in New Zealand.
So the definition is consistent with other councils in New Zealand,
okay.
Not the diagram. Not sure about the diagram. The definition is consistent with other ones in New Zealand. Dunedin, Dunedin and Auckland just bring to mind immediately. I think there's another couple.
Oh, okay. Now that's my key point, because obviously if it's a from a tradition like we have here, if you've got an accepted model which has been adopted by other councils, that adds to the weight of the system that you're using. That's my question.
Why the district council also, and Auckland and Dunedin City Council use the same sort of definition.
Okay. Next question I want to ask is, were this new listings, were the landowners aware that trees, additional trees or new trees were going to be listed on their properties when the plan was being prepared?
So far to my knowledge, for the new protected trees, the landowners were notified.
What form did that take?
In an email.
Okay. My final question was just relates to the very last point you were talking about in your summary submissions, which is public utility operators, from my knowledge, tend to be utterly ruthless with protecting their infrastructure and will brook no opposition whatsoever. Do I understand from this, has there been discussions with these providers in terms of what should go into the plan or at all?
We're talking about utilities?
Utilities, with wires that affect trees, because they're one of the main hazards that trees face.
They admitted that they wanted the right to be able to trim trees as permitted activity, but only for the Arrowtown trees. And I considered that only for the trees that were in Table 2,
yep.
So the ones that are in public spaces. And I have previously worked for a utilities company, and I know that normally what their policy is that they send a notice to the landowner before taking out works in regards to when the tree is getting too close to their line. They will send you a notice saying, please do this or we'll do this. So it was on that understanding that I decided that in the public spaces that should be fine, that they would have that as a permitted activity.
Okay.
Do you follow me?
Yes, yeah, so just because my next question was going to be, is a situation if either the council or a private landowner got a letter from the local power authority saying that the tree's too big, needs to be trimmed back drastically.
Mm.
The situation, well, might be drastically. If it's a private owner, they could be in a slightly awkward position because they're going to end up with a tree that they would need consent to have trimmed on their property or partly on their property.
Mm-hmm.
They could find themselves as meat in the sandwich between the utility provider and the council.
So,
has that been given any thought at all?
For protected trees, it's permitted, minor trimming is a permitted activity. So the landowner could go and do that themselves as a permitted activity, not have to seek approval from council first. For character trees, it's the same thing for minor trimming, which is 10%, which I think would be appropriate for getting the limit outside the way of the lines for an immediate emergency kind of situation.
So one would assume that before it got to be more than 10%, something should have happened before that stage. Is that really?
I imagine that the telecommunication utilities companies monitor their lines quite.
Yes. So it wouldn't have got to the stage where it was an absolute disaster and the tree was growing up through the lines, or you had the tree root system was affecting the underground lines to such an extent that it was should have been picked up earlier. Is that sort of?
No, I trust that the utilities companies would have picked it up before it becomes a big problem for them.
And the other question which I came up with earlier this morning is that the status of trimming, if it's more than 10%, it's discretionary activity?
That is...
Make sure I'm right about that, I thought it was.
That is correct, yes.
Now, was there any conscious reason why it was made discretionary as opposed to restricted discretionary? The reason I pose that question is that I would have thought, for an issue like that, it's really, this is just what I'm putting out there, really between the council as a regulating authority and the owner or owners concerned, rather than the wider public. Was the intention to make it discretionary to enable other, much wider people to become involved through public notification, submissions and such like? This is what I understand the rationale why it has to go to full discretionary.
So, I believe that I was not the author of the original notified version, but I believe that the reason why it's discretionary and not restricted discretionary is a follow-over from the ODP.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you had the opportunity to consider whether strict discretionary or discretionary might be the most appropriate, or have you not had that chance?
It wasn't submitted on, so I didn't consider it.
Okay. Would you like to...
Would I like to consider it now?
No, well, actually, if it wasn't submitted on, we probably can't do anything about it. So, that's just the question.
You may have answered that question. Mm. A couple of looks with the submissions.
It's okay.
Just again, with reference to the discussion, I was talking to a colleague about the hedge rules, and minor trimming of a hedge rule means the removal of not more than 50% of the live foliage. Is that something that is death by a thousand cuts, so you could just get the hedge rule smaller and smaller and smaller until eventually it just disappears in the light?
That's not the intention.
I understand. Just about.
I understand that hedges and trees can be trimmed differently to a certain extent, and for example with the protected trees it's always 10% and the hedges it's 50, so obviously you can cut back a lot more of a hedge than a tree, but I acknowledge that potentially the way that that rule is may allow for it to be continuously done, which is definitely not the intention.
Would you like to think about and just discuss with your colleagues whether a time frame could be put on that? Because clearly 50% 1 week and 50% in week two would comply with the rule, but you'd have 0% left.
Yeah, that's not ideal. I mean, there's... As soon as you do over 50% in the following week, then that would make it over 50%, technically. It would make it 100%.
Well, no, technically, because the second time you started with something smaller.
Yes.
And that's what I mean. And
should be potential.
You've got a chance in the right reply just to answer that question. I've got a couple of questions about the rules, and I know that you were not the person who prepared these, and some of the questions Ms. Scott may be more appropriate to answer. In Rule 32.4.5, it has, at the last sentence, work must not commence prior to the council confirming the permitted activity status of the removal or significant trimming of a protected tree. And I'm wondering whether that is a permissible rule, because it seems to me that it's giving a discretion to the council to determine whether it's a permitted activity or not. And I'm looking at Ms. Scott for the answer rather than myself. So.
She's nodding. yes, well, I'll speak to Ms. Law in terms of coming back on that, but you're right, it's a permitted activity, and a person can just go and do a permitted activity, provided that they comply with the standards. And
That seems to be suggesting that the council decides whether it's permitted or not, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's right. It does, as drafted.
The other one, and again, I'm raising this knowing that you didn't grasp it But it seems to me that there's confusion in the rules, in tables 3 in particular. I've marked it, but it's general, I suspect. No, it's only table 3. There's a confusion between the matters that discretion is restricted to for a restricted discretionary activity and the assessment matters. Because the rule 32.5 says rules assessment matters, and then it starts off, matters of discretion for restricted discretionary activities are restricted to all of the following. Now, the matters of things that are restricted to are distinct from assessment matters, and I think that needs some redrafting to repair that somehow. And I'll just note that rule 32.4.21 has that same problem with the permitted activity issue.
Yes.
Now, in your evidence, Ms. Laws, you referred to the consent decree for item 573. Did you include a copy of that consent with your report? And if you didn't, but if you did, tell us where it is. And if you didn't, can you provide a copy, please?
I had intended to, and now I realise that I have not.
Okay. That's fine. It can be tabled tomorrow morning or something like that.
Awesome, I'll get you. Yeah, that's fine.
It's in paragraph 10.41, and you're discussing again the Ayrburn Farm trees going into the property, and you've identified that some should be included but some should not. I'm just wondering whether the provisions of the plan as proposed provide for groups of trees such as that, where the value of the group exceeds the sum of the values of the individual, be protected. And given this site's a rural area, we're not caught by that strange provision that Parliament forced on us.
As I read them, the provisions do not particularly protect groups of trees.
Right.
They potentially should, because if you take away some of these trees because they don't meet 120, you're lowering, in my opinion, the value of the rest. As a group, they're awesome.
Yes. In paragraph 13.18, we're dealing with the issue of environmental compensation. Now, we had some, we received evidence in the rural section that environmental compensation should apply where there are residual adverse effects that are unable to be avoided, remedied or mitigated. Do you see that that is the same sort of situation that should be considered in respect of trees?
Trees are protected because they're very big and have lots of value. And so the issue there is that when you provide compensation, normally the tree that you replace it, I'm assuming it's going to be some sort of replacement, it's going to be most often the option that people would take, if given that option, it's going to be a lot smaller. And so then you have this issue that the compensation wouldn't be to the same value of the large tree that was potentially removed. So I like the idea of that being an option.
Might it be a value in time?
Yes. In time it would. Potentially. If it grows nicely.
But my original question was not about whether you should do that or not, but mm-hmm. was whether the circumstances would be only after you've considered whether you can avoid, remedy or mitigate any effects.
I would say...
So yes. In other words, it's your last resort.
Yes.
In paragraph 1320, you talk about parks being adding next in 1321, adding an assessment matter.
Mm-hmm.
And my real question, I suppose this comes to the issue of the confusion as to what are a discretion and what is assessment matters, but it's whether the council's discretion extends to the matters that are referred to in the assessment matters. Has the council reserved its discretion to the matters that the assessment matters deal with, including the matter that the Parks Department is seeking, you're saying that it's already covered? And so I think, again, probably just bear that in mind with looking at that issue of the matters that discretion is restricted to. Did you have any questions, Roy?
No. One of the things that did occur to me, and it's just a minor concern, but is the dash in 35.1.2, the works are reasonably necessary.
Mm.
The definition of reasonably necessary, is that just something I'm missing?
I have not checked the definition chapter, but I imagine there's not a definition of reasonably necessary. That for me is what the council officer processing that would.
An assumption of it.
Mm.
Thank you. No further questions. Now,
So that's the end of the council witnesses and the evidence. We will ensure that the consent that you're after is handed up tomorrow before the hearing. I will also file electronic copies of the three documents that came in this morning so that they're on the website as well. I've got a number of matters jotted down for the reply. And Ms. Jones and Ms. Law will surely pass on anything else that's brought up over the next 2 days, I understand.
Yes, we finish on Wednesday. And 5 working days after that would be Wednesday of next week, which would be ample time for us because we're not meeting until the week after that. So.
I'm on court all next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so that's great for me.
Okay, I will adjourn until 10:30 tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
10:30.
Yes.